So my name's Noah Zoschke, and I'm a systems engineer at Heroku. Been around there for about 4 years now, and so seen a fair amount. So who are you? Are you guys familiar with Heroku? Raise your hand if you've used it or are familiar with it. Okay, so looks like about half. So Heroku, it's a cloud application platform as a service is kind of the jargon, but really focused on apps and app delivery. And the basic idea is we work with application developers who take an application code, started off as Ruby, but we support Node and Python and the JVM and everything, and really try to offer a service that does all the operations so you can just focus on your app. And so we build the scalable system to support customers, scaling up and down. We run our own data service, a Postgres service, to give you easy access to that for your CRUD application, and then integrate with a ton of other cloud providers to also plug in other data stores or monitoring or log analysis. And again, so hopefully, offer some, if not all, of the outsourcing of operations to application developers. And so here is, a very simple kind of straw man application. It's a Ruby application written in Sinatra. And Sinatra, you can take, a single file, a Ruby file, and use a nice little friendly DSL, domain-specific language, to accept some set of URLs and return some, sort of response to a user. So here I have probably the silliest API ever, Hello World API. So you get, the root and your app will serve that. And you can, there's a few other bits of plumbing for dependency management, depending on your language or whatnot, but you can more or less take a file like this and then git push Heroku master, and it'll be up and running. So the question is, how is this running? And there's a increasingly allowed explanation, which is just like, oh, it's in the cloud. Like, it doesn't, you just push it to a cloud provider and you're good to go. But somebody has to actually know how this is running. So myself and my team, and I'm sure many of you know a lot more about the bits and pieces behind this. And so I wanted to explore this and share some of the stuff we do at Heroku internally, how we've built our system and what we use and what it means to both application developers and other system administrators. And there's a metaphor that constantly comes up at Heroku. It's user space. And the opposite of that is a kernel. And this should be a pretty familiar metaphor for all of us. We're familiar with the classic like Linux kernel, and that's this black box that has total control of what's going on a system, and it imposes constraints, and then exposes some power, some flexibility to a user where a user can play around, and I think this metaphor maybe was part of the Linux or Unix jargon files since like 1985 or so. So system administrators are pretty familiar, again, with this classical model. You can build a kernel. You can also build a user space operating system set of tools and files and interfaces and control what users can do with that. So, pretty standard definition there. But this also applies up and down the entire stack and something I've noticed in my experience doing systems engineering is there's actually many of these kernels at play, and they're all composed together in some sort of distributed systems fashion is kind of how it works these days. All sorts of power is given to users at different layers, but somebody has to monitor and operate these things, so I wanted to just kind of give an overview of what that looks like to start. So we start with the Ruby, that git root, the Sinatra app, and this is what the very end of the user space that Heroku provides. We give some space to take code like this and do something with it. And so we're just integrating different layers of the stack here. So the first layer is the Ruby VM. So I'm sure everybody has, you know, is familiar with this concept, whether it's Ruby or Python or PHP or Node or whatnot. But the first interface, the first kind of space that you have to operate in is whatever interface that the language virtual machine offers you. So in this case, we have generally on Heroku, one of the more popular runtimes is the MRI Ruby, also known as C Ruby. And this is some program that takes code, parses it, and turns it into a bytecode. And bytecode is really kind of the interface that it gives you. As long as your code can parse and turn into that bytecode will operate under whatever rules are imposed by the Ruby VM, and you can code. So cool. And you know, for a lot of people, this is where you stop. You just get to play in your language VM and build an application, and you know, this is very powerful. And we'll get back to, you know, this is kind of what it's all about in the first place, is just having a really expressive and fun and easy place to program logic and run your application. But behind this, there's many, many more layers. So let's take a look at what that is. So Heroku runs everything in LXC containers. So the next kind of interface, the kernel is what Heroku provides. There's an API. Sometimes, you know, we call it the Cloud Exec or Heroku Exec. So we run an API where you can, with curl or with the Heroku client or, you know, programming your own HTTP client, you can operate these LXC containers. So we give you a couple different API endpoints that will start a process or a container, stop a process, run one attached where you can actually type stuff to it, run one detached where it kind of goes off in the background. And for us, you know, this is kind of the bread and butter of Heroku, is we're actually running LXC as a service. And but to a user, you know, we're running processes as a service. And you have all this stuff you can do, but you can't really go past that. You can just run and scale processes, but that's very powerful. That's the Heroku user space that pretty much empowers application developers to build all sorts of apps and services and connect different workers to your database and your work queue and so on. So we offer an API to do that. But that LXC container is running in yet another kernel, and in this case, it's Ubuntu. And so Heroku uses Ubuntu heavily, currently on 10.04 long-term support. And this, so the combination of the operating system and the kernel that it does exposes C groups, and that's kind of a primitive that LXC uses. How many of you guys are familiar with LXC and C groups here? Right, so this is becoming increasingly popular. It's technology that's been around for a while, containerization, but it seems like it's getting a lot of newfound focus and energy in Linux these days as, you know, lightweight virtualization, but just really powerful but fast and simple primitives in the kernel for controlling what a user can do on the system. And so In our case, we use this for kernel namespaces, resource limits, and accounting. With C groups, you can keep on a multi-tenant service one user's process tree completely separate from another one in terms of what they can see and in terms of some of the resources that they can access. And so this is yet another system that need to know the operating system and what it offers in terms of user space, LXC, C group tools, and also a little bit, you know, behind the scenes of, if not a lot behind the scenes of how this stuff works. So at Heroku, for better or worse, we have another layer on top of this, which is Xen and the hypervisor. So we're running entirely on Amazon. So in our case, you know, we're in a VM and then splitting that VM up. I'm sure everybody's familiar with Xen, but who knows how this actually works, how hypervisors work? Cool, good, a few people, a handful of people, which I would expect. But you know, for many of this is black magic. I'll be honest, it's over my head. I know how to use the tools, but don't really understand how, you know, these interact with the operating system to provide secure and performant sharing of the CPU. But sure enough, you know, it's there. This has been really core technology for cloud services, how we use a hypervisor, or, you know, whether it's VMware or Xen or KVM or whatnot. So yet another layer of control. And hypervisor is yet another term that really expresses this metaphor. It's this thing, the hypervisor, like it knows everything, it controls everything, and will not let a virtual operating system go across boundaries. So again, the more you know about this, the better. But we can keep going kind of up the stack a little bit. So since we're on Amazon at Heroku, there's yet another operating system here and another interface. This is even more black box to most people, because Amazon's not particularly open with how this stuff is actually written. But you know, we know a fair amount about it. It's some sort of custom Amazon Linux, which I believe is based on Red Hat, and some sort of custom Xen that they have, and you know, and some sort of paravirtual API. So this is a layer slightly below the hypervisor that operates with that controls what you actually can do on the bare CPU. From what I understand, Amazon does really advanced things on this now. Stuff like masking out CPU properties to kind of provide legacy interfaces, or to make it look like, you know, these instance types that have been around for a while are maintaining constant while the hardware underneath them is changing. But again, you know, don't know tons of the details here. But on top of that, we have the Intel CPU. And so we're getting pretty low level now, but yet again, this is another set of systems where there's hardcore control over what you can do. And this is, you know, we're getting close to the bare metal here, but there's somewhere for that Ruby application, which is way down at the bottom now, there's actually a CPU that it's running on, and an instruction set that the bytecode is turned into, you know, system calls, is turned into all these chain of calls, and it's actually finally modifying transistors somewhere on a CPU. So cool. So we've gotten from the application, the Ruby app, to the CPU. Are we done yet? Nope. There is one more layer, which is physics. And this is one very easy to forget that this is behind everything, but this is truly the kernel to run them all. There's properties of matter and space and time that basically we can't beat, we absolutely can't beat. So there's stuff like power utilization and heat and the speed of light and how that interacts with networking and all these things. And this is really the fabric of all this stuff. So yeah, again, we can, you know, start at our Ruby code, and it's really easy to forget that all these things are here, but somewhere there's a server that's going to die at some point, whether it's overheating or the power flashing out, and there's actually, you know, stuff we need to know about this and build these systems with this in mind. So, man, that's it's a pretty complicated stack here. I like MC Escher a lot. Not entirely sure which level we're on, if we're up in the top where it's actually a lot of it's all this order, or are we, you know, down at the bottom where it's basically just weird patterns and chaos and nobody really understands what's going on. But next question is, okay, why all these layers? So, and that as I was, you know, constantly working on this stuff and working on this talk, that was almost an existential crisis here. I'm looking at this stuff and I'm like, oh my God, what are we doing? Because there's a lot of reasons why you don't want all these layers here. You know, they're black boxes. Not everybody can understand all these things. Not everybody wants to. And there's all these, you know, problems. It's very complex. Every single layer of this, you know, represents, you know, if you're going to learn about it, understand it, it could represent a lifelong of complexity, understanding the systems and engineering. And similarly, performance, you know, is not ideal with all these layers. There's You know, a classic, you know, Ruby VM gets kind of panned sometimes for being slow, and that's at the beginning layer. You can imagine with all these transition layers and you know, running on multi-tenant services and running on slices of CPUs and going through different these software stacks, you can imagine, you know, we aren't getting the raw performance out of these systems at all. Another big problem is customization. Each kernel, by what it imposes, it's taking away your ability to do other things, whether it's with the metal or interacting with the system, what's available on the file system, what you're able to install. And so we get fairly narrow, you know, interfaces at the end. And Heroku, there's power in that, but you know, Heroku is very opinionated about what you can do and very clear about what you can't do. And you know, not every use case, every application stack will run on Heroku. And similarly, you know, Amazon's the same way. They've gotten a lot better, but there was a time when you couldn't run custom kernels or different operating systems, and this applies all the way up the stack. And finally, though last but not least, visibility is a huge problem here. If each one of these layers, you know, is either operating as a black box or truly is a black box, it's really hard to understand what's going on. So pretty much the bane of my existence at Heroku right now is, you know, a support ticket comes in and a customer says, "Hey, my app is slow. What's going on?" And the, you know, so many times the answer is like, "Well, shoot, we don't really know. Could be your application code. I hope it is. But it could be that our instance is overloaded. It could be that the instance is, that Amazon's instance is overloaded. It could be that you're hitting weird corner cases in VMs or memory pressure or LXC or whatnot." And really, there's you know, not all the tools to be able to debug this, even if you have all the keys to the kingdom, like I do. So there's many times where just do not have visibility into how these systems are operating. But there has to be some reasons why. And hopefully, you know, hopefully there are reasons why, and the answer isn't like, "Oh, we're all insane," or "I'm insane," or "Heroku's insane." But surely there are. And one huge one, and pretty much where a lot of this stuff came from, certainly virtualization technology in the first place, comes from operational efficiency. So, you know, you can rack a CPU and plug it in and plug in a network, but pretty quickly, you know, we wanted to get away from like, well, one process, one user, one app on one server. And virtualization technology offered a very clear path for that, where you can rack up a much larger amount of computing resources and slice that up. And hopefully that improves, you know, just the sheer numbers of little units you have to plug in. And on pretty much on the level that we're at now, there's huge operational efficiency gains here in terms of, you know, what the data centers look like and how much stuff they're doing in you know, these smaller or these large units. Similarly, security. That's kind of the point of kernel in the first place, is that it controls access to keep the system secure. So this is pretty good. I mean, we started using LXC at Heroku, you know, a few years ago now, and really, primarily not for resource containerization, but just for security. The traditional Unix user model offers a lot there, a lot of security, but putting stuff in LXC containers and using chroots and pivot roots and kind of tweaking properties of the kernel for what a process can see is incredibly powerful. And similarly, you know, all the way up the stack, the security model between two VMs running on a box is, you know, very, very powerful now. And but all this really comes together for human reasons, and leverage is a big word that I like to use. The idea is that with all these layers of the stack, and we can line them all up, you as an application developer get to leverage years and decades of all this expertise that's gone into these layers. So whether it is for security or operations or just general computing knowledge and functionality, these layers of systems give you a really expressive way to take part in this ecosystem. So you can take very expressive, simple Ruby code, run it on a system like Heroku, run it on EC2, run it on any other provider, and gain a ton of efficiency. So, you know, this is really one of the powers of the cloud is how you don't have to worry about this stuff. You can outsource it if you want to and get lots of power. So then the next question is like, okay, well, where is this going? For Heroku, but providers in general, there's a lot of work to do here still. I really enjoyed the keynote this morning. Joyent has been doing a lot of great work here, but these services and systems need to build far more rigorous properties into these low layers. A lot of that already exists. You know, Amazon gives you an API to route around physical power failures. That's great. Heroku then takes that and abstracts that even more and hopefully automatically routes you around that stuff. So that's really powerful, and we need to keep doing that. Similarly, a challenge certainly at Heroku is to remove some of these layers. They're not all necessary for running applications. It would be wonderful to remove Amazon at some point, but you know that comes with another set of problems. And again, you know, one of the biggest problems is around visibility, and this is yet another way. This is probably where I see the most work we have to do. Is these lower layers need to give you visibility tools into what's going on, and it doesn't necessarily mean you need root access to all these different layers or SSH access to the boxes or instances or whatnot. There's plenty of emerging technology on how these services can emit metrics, emit instrumentation, and do so in a way that other layers can take advantage of that. But we have a ton of work to do here. Something we're working on a lot on the platform layer at Heroku, but again, need to find much better and stronger tools for the operating system, for the virtualization systems, and figure out how to get visibility and metrics out of all these things. And finally, another powerful pattern here is that we do have to keep running these things as services. So there's public cloud stuff like Heroku, like Amazon, but I'm personally not a big private cloud fan for application development, but this metaphor is really important even for private services, and it's a challenge to us as system administrators is to run our internal, our private systems in this fashion. It's not just like, hey, the IT department, call this guy and have him reboot the server. It's running these things as services and building automation and tools around them. And so hopefully, some of us focus on that and then continue to do this dance of what a user space is able to do also. So constantly, I think we're all in the search for more expressiveness. You can see this trend with other cloud services like Parse that, now we're having really high API data hosted services. And the hope is for people to be able to do more, save their users, save their passwords, plug in a little custom logic without having to understand this stuff. And so something we're constantly doing at Heroku is working to make our APIs more elegant and more expressive. So there's a new version of the API coming out that we're documenting that hopefully makes the release and run system much more clear and easier to use and something you can integrate with other services. So that's really a huge goal of us on all these layers. Another place I see this happening, Docker is a really popular project right now, and that's taken LXC and C groups, which is pretty hard, low-level technology to use, and wrapped it up in some really expressive and friendly tools. We have some applause for Docker. Hopefully that trend continues, and that really personifies the kind of dance here, which is, well, you have a tool, Docker, that's wrapping up all this complexity, and then you're, you know, exposing that to a user in a way that's much easier. And again, you know, the goal there is just to focus on applications and application developers and give them, you know, enough power to be happy, not enough power to shoot themselves in the foot, but and the tools to understand what's happening. And so with that, that's my presentation about kernels and user spaces, so thank you.
Sorry, does anyone have any questions?
Yep.
I could give you one directly.
Sure.
One thing that I got from this is a lot of this work is going into making it easier for more and more users to come and become a web developer if they have a small requirement or a small job. What happens to the community when you introduce, what is the plan to handle all these users into a new world of programming without, because you're kind of telling them you don't need to know an awful lot of complicated stuff and you're telling us you really should.
Right. Great question. Do I need to repeat that? Question is, what there's this divide between users that are just making applications and those of us that are controlling and how do we support that? How do we right? So yeah, it's a great question. So at Heroku, our job is to first explicitly explain the interfaces like as straightforward as possible and enforce good practices for application developers. So stuff like you get an ephemeral file system. If you truly care, and hopefully you do, we can explain why that's a nice property for your application. And so hopefully make it clear, like, well, follow these rules. That you have to follow these rules so you don't have to worry about this. So being very clear about the trade-offs is important. In terms of the whole landscape, I do think it's a challenge. It's incredibly hard for us to support those application developers that are so focused on their application and don't understand, you know, the Heroku black box, let alone other layers. And when they have those questions like, hey, how is my app performing? The answer is like, well, or why is my app performing poorly? The answer is, well, first you need to go back and change your app a little bit and add some tools to instrument around it and at least get some understanding of what API points are having a hard time. Is it latencies? Is it long tail latencies? So there's plenty of education to do here. And you know, this applies at every layer. I think application frameworks, you know, or Node or whatnot, heard earlier this morning how that's building some tools in, like Dtrace. So hopefully, we as application developers mature and their tools mature, well, we can just have switches to turn on, and where you don't have to know all this stuff, but somebody who does can help navigate the space. But it's absolutely a challenge. The question is, how does Heroku compare to OpenShift, and other products? So one huge difference about Heroku is that we're a fully hosted service. So there's basically no ability to take our service and run it behind your firewall or configure your own services like that. It's definitely one of our core values that the value is in hosting and running software, not necessarily about writing software for you to take and run yourself. But of course, that depends where you exist in this development for public and private cloud. So past that, you know, I see plenty of architectural similarities between all these things. It's, you know, some sort of horizontally scalable service for running processes, some sort of coordination between that, and you know, every cloud service or cloud set of tools is similar on a lot of levels these days, but it's the real difference is who's running it. Are you running it? Is somebody else running it for you? And yeah.
So each one of those levels that you mentioned, except I guess the natural level, has a cache and a caching strategy, and sometimes those things interact in undesirable ways. Do you have any comments about how you might manage that?
Sure. So the short answer is that it does act in weird ways, and who knows. So at Heroku, we very much follow kind of the fail fast service there. We get lots of weird bugs over time, whether it's kernel bugs or applications stalling out or whatnot. And one strategy is just provide tools to, if something weird happens, just blow up, stop the container, restart it somewhere else, stop the instance, let the work go somewhere else. As far as low-level stuff, don't have tons of insight other than, you know, we just trust the operating system, trust the virtualization layer, and you know, I'd say that's definitely another place where there's problem. It's just hard to get visibility with all these layers into such a low-level problem like that. But yeah, do you have strategies to share with that stuff? What is it, cache invalidation, one of the hard problems? Question in back. Right, so the question is, does Heroku use distributed container or configuration stuff like Mesos? So actually, we don't internally. The kind of highly available, so believe very much in Amazon and the services it uses or provides. So we use DynamoDB a lot as just like an always around, fast, consistent data store. Knock on wood, haven't dealt with any problems in that. So that behind the scenes, I'm sure, is doing the same, you know, highly available replication, consensus algorithm. Again, it's a bit of a black box, but that's a really powerful primitive for us. Starting to play around with Zookeeper a little bit, but not using it for critical path stuff yet. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Noah.
All right, thank you.